I'm Morgan Springer from Next and the New England News Collaborative. Our next guest is Anissa Ramirez. She's a material scientist, a former professor at Yale University, and author of the book The Alchemy of Us, which came out this spring. The book focuses on 8 scientific inventions and how they've transformed our lives in unintended ways. The book begins with the clock. Anissa Ramirez, welcome to Next.
Oh, thank you so much.
You write about the clock and how it impacted sleep. And something I had never heard of before was this thing called first sleep and second sleep. What's the deal there?
Yeah, that completely blew me away, too. And if you look at old books like Jane Eyre or Don Quixote, you'll see the word first sleep or second sleep. And what they're talking about is before the Industrial Revolution, we used to sleep differently. We would go to bed around 9 or 10, sleep for 3.5 hours, and then wake up on purpose and do things around the house, you know, read, sew, hang out with our neighbors because they were up too. And then we'd go back to sleep for another 3.5 hours. Those 2 segments were called first and second sleep, and everybody slept that way. So that's what I discovered in my book, The Alchemy of Us. And what changed that was 2 inventions. It was the clock and the light bulb. The light bulb allowed us to go to bed later, so that first sleep got shortened. With the clock, we had to get up earlier to go to the factory, so that segment became shorter. And so those 2 segments of sleep became consolidated, which resembles the type of sleep that we have today.
And so this first sleep, second sleep, it was completely natural. It was like an internal clock we were following, right?
Yeah. In fact, they've done studies and they've allowed people to sleep off their sleep debt because most of us are exhausted. And they put them into darkness for 14 hours for a month. And it ends up that people started to revert to this segmented sleep, the 2 doses of sleep, with a groggy period in between. So some scientists believe that this is actually the natural way to sleep. And many of us may wake up in the middle of the night and feel that we have insomnia, but historians would say that, well, what we are actually doing is echoing back to that old segmented sleep.
So interesting. Yeah, and so, I mean, there are obvious benefits of the clock. We can make appointments and keep them, and we can maybe have an easier time connecting with people. But is that the big unintended consequence? Is it, for you, is it the disconnection from our internal clocks?
For me, it's that we don't recognize that we actually have our own clocks. And sometimes we should just depart from the clock. You know, we can do that with vacations, you know, actually taking weekends where we're not really wearing our watches and we just go with the flow. Our bodies would prefer that once in a while. So our desire for more precision with our clocks has actually divorced us from how our brains and our bodies actually work.
So chapter 1 was the clock, which we've talked about, and you focus on 8 scientific inventions in the book. Now, another is photography and the interaction between race and photography. You talk about the impact on how Black people were photographed versus white people. What happened there?
Well, photography used to be a very democratic art because all you had to do was have some chemicals, go into your kitchen, smear some stuff on some glass, make sure that it wasn't exposed to light, and then you can open and close a lens and you could take a picture. But when film became manufactured and mass-produced, it was optimized, and it was optimized for the primary customer, which is actually people who are white. And so many years ago, it was found by African-American women that their children were not being rendered as equally as white children in a class photo. And it ends up that the chemical formulations that were designed were optimized, again, not for Black people. And so Black children turned out to be very dark or underexposed. And so what I talk about in The Alchemy of Us is that our technologies sometimes capture the values of the culture, not just the people, the images, but what group is valued.
Yeah, so to that point, what can we learn from this? Like, how can we be better at not having our biases enter technology?
Well, the first thing we have to realize is that technology and science is not neutral. They are endeavors that come from humans, and we have biases. So how we think about the world goes into our inventions. As much as we work hard to make sure that that's not the case, there is an implicit bias in our inventions. So one of the things we can do, particularly with devices or within science, is that to have a huge group of people of different backgrounds working on a project, because that way you'll be able to illuminate if there's a bias. If you have a small demographic working on a technology, as I discuss in The Alchemy of Us with photography, if you are only testing it on a small population and then you put it out into the world, well, it's only going to work for that population.
Yeah, because the mothers that you were talking about who... It wasn't the mothers' complaints that actually made things change, right? It was complaints from chocolate and furniture makers.
Right. So African-American mothers petitioned these manufacturers and said, look, let's just change this formulation so that it can handle a range of hues. And nothing happened. But when chocolate makers and furniture makers petitioned these same film companies, they said, look, we are unable to show dark woods and dark chocolate, and we need to sell this stuff, and we have lots of advertisement, and we need your film for it. And we're not going to use your film if we can't sell our product with it. And so, okay, then that formulation was changed. So this story kind of also highlights what motivates people sometimes.
And the formulation's changed, and photography does a better job today, but it's not perfect, is it?
Well, now we have digital photos, and still there's some bias in that. Particularly recently, you've seen in the news things about facial recognition. Doesn't pick up dark skin as well. And so that's got some negative repercussions, because if you're misidentified, bad things could happen that way. So those who have made the code behind the facial recognition, again, did something similar to what the chemists did decades ago, whereas that they may have just tested their technology on a small population. And as a result, they're going to launch this into the world, and there's going to be people who are going to be left behind, or even worse, have a negative impact as a result of this technology.
I want to talk a little bit about you and what inspired you to become a scientist.
Oh, I love science since I was very, very young. I was one of those kids who asked a lot of questions and took things apart. But what put me on the path was actually television. I grew up in the 70s and 80s, and my favorite shows back then were Bionic Woman and The $6 Million Man, and Star Trek, Spock was my man. I loved him. But the show that really put me on my path to becoming a scientist was this PBS show called 3-2-1 Contact. And in it, it had a repeating segment of an African-American girl solving problems with her friends. They were called the Bloodhound Gang. And when I saw her, I saw my reflection. There weren't too many positive images of little black girls on TV. And I said, I don't know what she's doing. I asked my mom. She said, that's science. I said, well, that's what I want to do.
And you call yourself a science evangelist, and you write in a really accessible way. You don't get bogged down in jargon. And I'm wondering, who are you trying to reach with your work?
Well, in my work, I've met lots of people who love science. In fact, I think everyone starts off as a scientist, meaning that they're very curious about the world. But something turns them off. Maybe it's a bad teacher, bad experience in a class. Lots of books are kind of talking over people's heads. And what I'm trying to do is just bring them back. I'm like, hey, I know science wasn't taught right. I get it. Here it is. I've spent a lot of time with it. I've got the information. I want to make sure that it's accessible to you. So let me share this information with you, because you deserve it, because you like science. And just because it was taught to you poorly doesn't mean that you don't have to enjoy it and explore it. Here's your second chance. So I feel that that's my calling. I love explaining science. I love reconnecting people to science. And so that's why I call myself a science evangelist.
That was Anissa Ramirez, a scientist and author of numerous books, including The Alchemy of Us, which came out this spring. Anissa also hosts a science podcast called Science Underground. You can check it out at scienceunderground.org. Listen to Next on NPR One or wherever you get your podcasts.